Tommy Showtime. Tommy Showtime. A half hour of action and entertainment. Stories of the valor and humor of the Australian soldier, with music from today's scene sung and played for you by Australian entertainers. And here to get Army Showtime on the road is your storyteller and compere, Terry McDermott.
Hello there. Glad to be back again with some great young Australian performers. We've got Joe Mura and a top pop group, the Iguana. That's a kind of lizard, so I'll have a lizard to them later on. Oh, and apart from terrible puns like that, we also have stories of two kinds of courage. You may even consider them as contrasts in courage. It may be, but you can't deny. These two were soldiers of a splendid breed. One was a young private soldier. The other a mature officer, an Australian Army major. They fought in different wars. One in the United Nations conflict in Korea back in 1951. The officer in South Vietnam, and not so long ago. The private soldier of a famous Australian infantry battalion became a prisoner of war. The major, operating as a member of the elite band of Australian Army advisors in South Vietnam, defied the enemy to capture him. Two things these soldiers had in common. First was unwavering courage. Second, both died for their country. Their heroism is undoubted, but each had valor of a different kind. Because of the circumstances, see what you think. First, listen to the story of the private soldier, Private Horace William Madden, a signaller with the 3rd Battalion, the Royal Australian Regiment, who fought in Korea. His digger mates knew him as Slim Madden. Nicknames can be misleading, but he was Slim, a young Australian soldier with determined jaw and steady eyes. He was with his battalion on April 24, time of the Anzacs, back in 1951, when the Chinese struck with human wave tactics. For hours they'd heard the Chinese battle bugles and the clamour of Chinese cymbals. Slim Madden, along with his mates, knew this was the sound of the massive spring offensive the Chinese had been preparing for. They dug in a little deeper on that hill at Cap Yong as the sounds of battle came closer. The Chinese came with noise, a mighty discord, the rattle of small arms, the crash of artillery and mortars, their braying bugles and jangling cymbals. Up on the hill slope of Cap Yong, the Australians heard an even more ominous sound. It was the sad sound of a South Korean division breaking before the tidal wave assault. Then the sound, the violence and the fury descended on the Australians. The flood broke against the 3rd Battalion positions, but the Australians held. When the Chinese flood eddied back and away, it was found that Slim Madden was among those missing. Well, it's a pity to break into our story at that point, but we are going to let you hear music too. And although I'm supposed to do all the talking on this show, I'm going to ask our first artist to say hello. Because if you haven't seen Joe Mura on TV, you may not know that behind that name is a very attractive young lady. Joe's short for Josephine, is that right?
That's right, Terry. Would it be a fair exchange if I told them that your name isn't Teresa?
Why not? They're bound to find out sooner or later. I don't know. I seem to invite trouble. Wouldn't you rather sing than talk, I hope?
Well, if you insist. How'd you like to listen to The Look of Love?
Listen to The Look? Oh, that's Irish. Oh, my name's not Teresa McDermott. Here's Joe Mura.
Of love is in your eyes, a look your smile can disguise. The look of love, it's saying so much more than just words could ever say. And what my heart has heard, well, it just takes my breath away. I can hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long have I waited, waited just to love you? Now that I have found you, you've got the look of love. It's on your face, a look that time can't erase. Be mine tonight. Let since we're just the start of so many nights like this. Let's take a lover's vow and then steal it with a kiss. I could hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long have I waited just to love you? Now that I have found you, don't ever go. I love you so. Please don't ever go. Don't you know I love you so?
A really soulful look at love with Joe Mura. More from Joe later. Now, you remember that Slim Madden was among those missing after the Chinese human wave receded? Korea, 1951? Well, at first it was believed he was killed because the full fury had burst along the ridge where he'd been. But later, news came in. Word filtered back that Slim Madden had been captured by the Chinese and taken north to one of their prison camps along the bitterly cold Yalu River. Word was that the enemy couldn't break Slim Madden, Private Madden of Three Ra. A particular type of courage is needed to survive in an enemy prison camp. It must consist of faith, of the power to endure, and the desire to stay alive. Now, these sound elementary, but when the enemy denies a prisoner food and medicine, treats him to brutality, solitary imprisonment, tries to warp his mind, humiliate him before his comrades, now, it's not easy to keep the faith. When a man can keep faith that one day he'll be released, when he's able to endure starvation and brutal suffering and shows he's determined to survive, then he has the quality of bravery. However, when in addition he is willing to sacrifice his life so that his example might keep weaker comrades alive, he becomes a great man. Ah, it's pretty easy to talk about these things. It's a very different matter to endure them. For 6 months, Slim Madden stayed alive. He stayed alive while the blizzards swept down from Siberia razor sharp. It was a cold that became hideously intense when a man has no fat and only meager flesh on his bones. The communists starved him. They beat him savagely, but Slim Madden kept his smile, his wink at his mates, his thumbs up when the Allied jets whined high above them up by the Yalu border. Even as his jaws became sunken, his eyes dull and his body more frail, his smile never lost its confident warmth. The enemy saw all this and tried even harder to break this Australian soldier's spirit. When he could only stumble and they shouted at him and struck him, Slim Madden still had a smile for his mates. When he fell and was too weak to rise, he had the strength merely to whisper. And his whisper was to his mates to stay with it, survive. Don't let him break it, mate. They broke his body, but never his spirit. On November 6, 1951, that Australian private soldier Slim Madden died. Would have been a great comfort to him to know that he hadn't died in vain. A survivor of that prison camp told me later how the inspiration given by Slim had kept so many others going. He was a real hero, the other wasted digger told me later. He was a real hero even though he didn't try to be. He didn't even know it. He became a sort of a legend. Nothing could make him cooperate with the enemy. When the full story of his cold courage came out, the Queen awarded Slim Madden the rare distinction of the George Cross, the equivalent to the Victoria Cross. His was the only George Cross awarded during the Korean War. To and for his mates, Slim Madden had given his rations, his spirit, his life. Before we tell our other story of courage, let's listen to the Iguana, with two numbers that seem to belong together now. Can't take my eyes off you and going out of my head. Anatomically, that sounds weird, but musically, it's just great. The Iguana.
Well, I think I'm going out of my head. Yes, I think I'm going out of my head. Over you, over you. I want you to want me. I need you so badly.
I can't think of anything but you. Just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You seem like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. I know that love's like a ride, and that's when God, I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Going out of my head, all over you, out of my head, all over you, out of my head, day and night, night and day and night, all right, I love you, baby. Through the lonely night, I love you, baby. Trust in me when I say, whoa, whoa, please, baby, don't put me down, I pray. Oh, pretty baby, now that I've found you, stay and let me love you, baby. Let me love you. I want you to want me. I need you so badly. I can't think of anything but you. Going out of my head, over you, out of my head.
The Iguana with I Can't Take My Eyes Out of My Head and I Think I'm Going Off You, or vice versa. We're leaving the music now and going back to our second story. 16 years after Private Slim Madden's death in 1951, in another war, another Australian soldier gave his life. He was Major Peter John Badko, killed during operations in Toa Tien province in South Vietnam on April 7, 1967. He died fighting in a different manner. Died with the fury of enemy fire bursting upon him. Died while inspiring his men to resist the enemy. 5 months later, the Australian Prime Minister announced that Major Badko had been awarded the Victoria Cross posthumously. Those who knew Major Badko told me he was a mild man in appearance. He wore spectacles and had a round face. You'd have taken him for a schoolmaster instead of a dedicated professional soldier, said one of his friends. Major Badko was indeed a dedicated professional soldier. He was born in South Australia in January 1934, graduated from Officer Cadet School at Portsea in Victoria on December 13, 1952. Now he was only quite 19. He began his military career as an artillery officer and served with an Australian field battery in Malaya. But infantry was his real military love. He wanted action at close quarters, so he changed to the Royal Australian Infantry Corps and sought a posting to Vietnam. In Vietnam, Major Badko became a legend on the battlefield. Even among the soldiers of the Australian Army training team, that elite team of advisors, the name of Major Badko became legendary. His reputation happened like this. On one of his first operations in Vietnam, his South Vietnamese soldiers came under fire, heavy machine gun fire. It swept at them from a deep-dug enemy bunker. His men were forced to ground as the fire raked their position. It seemed they were to be pinned down, picked off, and finally destroyed by the enemy. But Major Badko stood and took a good look at the enemy position. And all this time, mind you, the enemy guns were blasting lead at him. The air about him was alive with swift whisper of hostile fire. Then he took out his grenades and moved in. The ground shook as he tossed in his grenades. Smoke and dirt spouted from the enemy bunker, and suddenly there was silence. His men rose up, cheering. The legend of Major Badko had begun. It was not that he sought to become a legend. It was just that this was the way he saw soldiering, getting on with the job regardless. But others saw him in a different light. The colonel of the United States Army told me he was courageous to an indefinite degree. Almost fearless, I should think. Again and again he was out at the front finding out what was going on. The American colonel's eyes took on that sort of dreamy look that sometimes comes to men's eyes when they talk of a hero. He told me Major Badko was very proud of his Vietnamese troops, and they were proud of him. He used to charge out in front of them, his old Aussie parachutist beret on his head, leading his men. The American colonel was seeing again that Australian advisor, red beret worn down over one eye, storming out in the face of enemy fire. He remembered the time when one of our outposts was overrun. The Viet Cong was there everywhere, but Major Badko went out in the dark and laid a minefield, without lights, on his own except for the enemy. And they had many stories to tell, like the time when the enemy attacked his outpost in strength, screaming threats as they came. It was a crisis time where the enemy confident that they were about to destroy that position. They'd already cut down an American officer, and now they were ready to finish the rest off. Major Badko saw it in a different light. First, he went towards the advancing enemy and picked up the American officer's body and carried it back to where his men still held. Then he turned to his men and pointed to the enemy. "Let's go," he said. They followed him, cheering his charmed life in the face of that fire until the enemy turned. Those Viet Cong that were left turned and fled, leaving Major Badko and his men their dramatic victory. When it comes to song titles, sometimes they fit, sometimes they don't. And you don't want to get too flip after you've been talking about men like Peter Badko. But the Iguana's second number, which has nothing to do with the subject, is one you could sing to a retreating enemy. "I Don't Want to See You No More." the iguana. And I hadn't finished the story of Peter Badcat. The crowning day of his career was that April day when the enemy turned a determined attack against his company of South Vietnamese. Mortar bombs burst among his men while heavy machine gun fire tore into their ranks. His men were forced to the ground and pinned there. The enemy continued their mortar bombardment, and finally the South Vietnamese pulled back. Major Badco stayed there, a radio operator by his side, and he saw how the land lay. Then he rose and loped back to his men. "Come on," he roused them and pointed forward. They got up and followed him as he went towards the enemy, grenade in his hand for throwing. The enemy turned all their violence at him. His radio operator grabbed hold of the Major and pulled him to earth, shouting, "No, no." But Major Badco rose again, grenade still ready. This time the enemy machine gun fire caught him and cut him down. Then his men rose, shouting as they saw him fall, and they went forward and overran that enemy position. It would have been all that Major Badco wanted, if he'd been alive to see. So those are two stories of courage. Courage of a different kind, each a source of inspiration to our Australians who soldier on. Each part of the proud tradition of our fighting men. And while you're remembering them, the attractive voice of Joe Murer returns. The attractive rest of her does too, but the voice is all you're getting. And that, as she tells you, is so nice.
Someone to hold me tight, that would be very nice. Someone to love me right, that would be very nice. Someone to understand each little dream in me. Someone to take my hand, to be a team with me. So nice, life would be so nice if one day I'd find someone who would take my hand and stumble through life with me. Someone to cling to me, stay with me right around. Someone to sing to me some little samba song. Someone to take my heart and give his heart to me. Someone who's ready to give love a start with me. Oh yes, that would be so nice. Should it be you and me, I could see it would be nice. Someone to take my heart and give his heart to me. Someone who's ready to give love a start with me. Oh yes, that would be so nice. Should it be you and me, I could see that would be nice.
So nice is so right. This time you've heard the voice of Joe Murer with the BEA Studio Group, the singing and playing of the iguana, and the story of Slim Madden and Peter Badco. This is Terry McDermott, hoping you can make it the same time next week for Army Showtime.
That was Army Showtime, your action and entertainment half hour. Music arrangements and direction by Jeff Kitchen. Produced by Monty Maisels in the studios of Broadcast Exchange of Australia for the Directorate of Army Public Relations. Thank you. Army Showtime. Army Showtime. A half hour of action and entertainment. Stories of the valor and humor of the Australian soldier, with music from today's scene sung and played for you by Australian entertainers. And here to get Army Showtime on the road is your storyteller and compere, Terry McDermott.
Hi. Well, we've got for you in the next half hour some lively jazz in mod pop vein and a fast-rising young man with a light touch in novelty songs. They're all set to take off after I get my story off the ground. Would you guess from that I'm about to tell you that the Australian Army has an aviation corps? Yeah, it's the plain truth. It's based in Queensland and acts as an eye in the sky for our fighting men on the ground. How? Try to stop me telling you. If you do, you'll miss the music. The Australian Army Aviation Corps operates light, fixed-wing aircraft and helicopters for reconnaissance. The small army aircraft scoot low over suspected territory. The pilot and his observer search for signs of enemy activity. When they find those signs, they call in attack. They call in artillery fire or armed aircraft to strafe the targets. Now, in case you think there's anything new in this, I ask you to accompany me for a moment or two back in the early years of this century. Not quite that early. Now, that's better. In 1912, an army submission to the Australian Army Military Board proposed that an Army Aviation Corps be established with the prime purpose of providing observation in the air for soldiers on the ground. 1912. That was the year when our Australian Army took the first step towards putting its own aircraft into the air. But it didn't take off at that time. The proposal sat revving on the runway for some time before soldiers became pilots. However, the first proposal was the first step. Looking back, it's easy to see that our military planners of those days were men of vision. What they planned then has come to pass in many ways. Army aircraft are, these days, very effective eyes in the sky for our soldiers. Back in 1912, the approach to an Army Air Corps was taken cautiously. It was considered, and I quote from the original proposal, that flying being at present a dangerous occupation, the medical officer should reside at the aviation school. In other words, better have the doc close handy to repair the damage. And the motor car was to be attached to the aviation corps to enable instructors to follow up flights. You can see him in hot pursuit of a biplane that has taken the bit between its teeth and gone swinging, swaying, bouncing and bounding off into the wild blue yonder in the flighting image of those magnificent men. Even while the officer is in hot pursuit in his car, there's a motor lorry following on. The early proposal included this lorry to carry spare parts and, as the proposal puts it, to bring in broken machines or injured aviators. The pilots of those days were to be paid £400 a year, $800. However, the proposal did not take off right then. It was not until the First World War took fighting men into the Middle East that Australian military men took to the air. And here's a young lad who's taken to the air, both TV and radio. He's not exactly a pop star, but we think he has great potential as an all-round entertainer. Johnny Ardley.
I should have known you bid me farewell. There's a lesson to be learned from this, and I learned it very well. Now I know you're not the only starfish in the sea. If I never hear your name again, it's all the same to me. And I think it's gonna be alright. Yes, the worst is over now. The morning sun is shining like a red rubber ball. You never care for secrets I confide. For you I'm just an ornament, something for your pride. Always running, never caring, that's the life you live. Stolen minutes of your time was all you had to give. And I think it's gonna be alright. Yes, the worst is over now. The morning sun is shining like a red rubber ball. The stories in the past were nothing to recall. I've got my life to live, and I don't need you at all. The roller coaster ride you took is nearly at an end. I bought my ticket with my tears, that's all I'm gonna spend. And I think it's gonna be alright. Yes, the worst is over now. The morning sun is shining like a red rubber ball. Oh, I think it's gonna be alright. Yes, the worst is over now. The morning sun is shining like a red rubber ball. A red rubber ball. The morning sun is shining like a red rubber ball.
Johnny Idley and the Bruce Woodley tune, Red Rubber Ball. Well, if in 1912 the Army Aviation Corps thought everything was going to be all right, they had to wait until 1958 to become fully fledged. That year, our Army flyers logged the 100,000th hour in the air. Army Lieutenant Rob Rich notched up the six figures for them as he piloted an Army aircraft over rugged Arnhem Land in the Northern Territory. The fact is that our Army pilots these days are pretty busy in many places, working with Army units in various parts of Australia, operating with our soldiers in the territory of Papua New Guinea, and in South Vietnam, of course, but I'll come to that later. The present Army Aviation Corps actually took off in 1950 when an air observation flight was operating out of Canberra. This was a Royal Australian Air Force unit. The machines were flown by officers of the Royal Regiment of Australian Artillery. Then in 1957, the No. 1 Australian Army Aviation Company was formed at Bankstown in New South Wales. Army pilots flew chartered aircraft. In 1960, our Army pilots were absorbed into the 16th Army Light Aircraft Squadron, based in Queensland. In the same year, the Aviation Corps was formally established. In that first year, 1960, Army pilots logged only 73 hours. 8 years later, the 100,000th flying hour came up, and we could say our eyes in the sky were truly airborne. Well, those are the facts, man. Some people like statistics, but it strikes me as a dull way of telling a very exciting story. So let's turn from history to the men who fly for the Army. Meet Captain John Coggan, who joined the Australian Regular Army back in the early 1960s. He served first as an artillery officer, then he qualified as a chopper pilot, and later as a pilot for a fixed-wing aircraft. In September 1967, Captain Coggan arrived in South Vietnam as the Rotary Wing Section Commander of the Australian Army's 161st Reconnaissance Flight. Our soldiers often call Vietnam the funny country. I couldn't start to tell you what the airmen call it. The thunderheads build up, tower high in the sky, magnificent pillars of purple. But inside, they're as turbulent as an active volcano. The heat provides an abundance of pockets to let your aircraft fall, whoosh, and your stomach stays up there. The rainstorms come in swift, blinding showers. Airfields are washed out. Unpredictable winds can toss a light aircraft against the abrupt hill slopes. And always, of course, there's the enemy. Anyway, in the first 9 months of his tour in Vietnam, Captain Coggan flew more than 1,000 hours in those far-from-perfect flying conditions. On many of his missions, he was fired on by the enemy below. But disregarding all those risks, he completed his allotted tasks. Then on the first day in February 1968, the enemy attacked a town named Phuoc Le. The enemy swarmed in at more than battalion strength, and the Australian Task Force was called in. Our soldiers of the 1st Australian Task Force moved at the double to help the stricken town. Captain John Coggan was in the air above our men as they hastened into the battle. He flew low, over and around the fighting, sending back his observations on enemy dispositions. The enemy recognized that eye up in the sky above them, and they tried time and time again to blind it. Captain Coggan flew on. Later that day, well into the night in fact, the call went out from our men on the ground for a dust-off helicopter. Dust-off is a word for a medical evacuation chopper. There were wounded men in the marketplace in the attack-torn town, and they needed hospital treatment. So the casualty evacuation chopper was called in. But high power lines had been shot down in that marketplace, and the evacuation helicopter hovered helplessly. That clear space below was not big enough for it to put down.
Captain Coggan and his smaller machine volunteered to go down. It was dark down there, except for the flash of fire, the red tracery of criss-crossing tracer bullets. Frequently, they curved up to where he hovered and went by, a flash of light and sound. However, there were wounded Australian soldiers down there in the disputed marketplaces, and wounded Vietnamese soldiers. Some of the wounded would not survive the night without hospital attention. So Captain Coggan lowered his small chopper down. He kept the rotors whirling as the medics carried wounded to the machine. Swiftly they worked, loaded the wounded as best they could in the limited space. Then off he went, fire following him as he whisked them back to the hospital. 3 times he went down into that marketplace and lifted out wounded. Each time he came under enemy fire. He did the job. That took courage, skill, and dedication. In fact, his work typified the Army Aviation Corps spirit. For his gallantry on that war-torn night, he was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross. 3 times into that marketplace on an errand of mercy. Of course, it's only coincidental that Michelle Kennedy sings with the graduate, "Mercy, Mercy, Mercy."
It seems like love's played a game on me. I'm lost in a sea of misery. My love has turned its back on me now. Heartache, won't you let me be? I say now, baby, have some mercy, please. Don't make on me, beg. On bended knees, I say, please. Mercy, 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 please. Have mercy on me. Mercy, 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 please. How can I face life without you? What would I do if we were through? Oh, don't you know, babe, I waited for you ever since I'm here. Hoping you return and make things right. You don't show, and I'm sitting here all alone. I'm alone. Too afraid you're gonna call me on the phone. I said, now, baby, have some mercy, please. Don't make your mama beg on bended knees. I said, please, mercy, 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 please. Mercy, 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 please. You know I love you, and I'm begging for one more chance, one chance, one more. Mm-hmm. I know life had many a twist. But loving you, Daddy, is the thing I cannot resist. Your love and understanding you've been giving, giving, giving. Without it, I just can't go on living. I said, baby, have some mercy, please. Don't make your mama beg on bended knees. I said, please, mercy, 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 please. Have mercy on me. Mercy, 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 oh, baby, now. You know I need you right here by my side. You won't listen to me now, baby.
Well, if Michelle Kennedy singing with the graduate gets you all up in the air, then it has some bearing on our Army story. Because it takes a whole group of people with both feet on the ground to get one soldier into the sky. The soldier flying that small army bird scooting along just above jungle top height pays his tribute to the one who keeps his machine in top flying condition. To keep our aviation corps flying, we have a highly skilled ground staff. It's their responsibility to see our flyers have the best. So every day our light aircraft and helicopters are cleaned and inspected, serviced, ready for the long hours of operational flying in support of our field forces. These groundsmen are specialists in their trades of airframe fitting, instrument fitting, radio, engines. They patch up the bullet holes, change engines after the flying hours are built up. In Vietnam, They've kept 9 out of every 10 of our aircraft in the air and in action, day by day. Now that sounds simple, but remember, these men on the ground also have their pace and pressures, often working on through the night, making the machine ready for the pilot to take off next morning. It's the claim of our Army Aviation Groundsmen that our machines log high hours with a minimum of accidents. This kind of claim gives the man at the controls the confidence he must have. You'll want to understand why it's vital that a pilot should have confidence in his aircraft. Daily, he trails his coat across the sky, inviting the enemy to reveal himself. I recall an operation in Vietnam. It was codenamed Operation Paddington, and it was a really wild affair. The 1st Australian Task Force was on it, and in support was the 161st Recce Flight. It was July weather, which means that the clouds were thick and treacherous, the wind shifty, and the thunder and lightning really hamming it up. In a word, it was mucky. And up in this muck is an Australian pilot by name of Lieutenant Colin Scott. He's watching the weather with one eye and the ground with the other, and he spots this crowd of Viet Cong down there. He knows immediately they are on collision course with our men moving in, and he has to report his sighting. But, and it happens in the best run outfits, his radio chooses that time to go on the blink. It takes him seconds to sum up the situation. The weather is against him, he is out of touch. The enemy is on the move in strength, and he has to put our ground force into the picture. Without hesitation, he banks round and heads back to the airstrip at base, jumps out and runs across to another machine, starts up even as he checks the radio and finds it ready for work. Within a few flying minutes, he's airboarding in and headed back to where he made the sighting, but the weather has turned savagely against him. Lower he goes to fly beneath the whipping grey veil of rain, and he banks round the area where he's seen the enemy force. And down there, he sees only the thick grey of the jungle rooftop. Somewhere in that timber, the enemy are hiding, waiting for him to run out of patience or fuel. He knows the enemy will remain hidden if they can, so he goes lower, almost bouncing his lower gear off the treetops, dragging his coat for the enemy, tempting them to fire and give away their positions. Back and forth he went, banking round low, scooting just over their heads, baiting them to see whose patience would run out first. Theirs did. They opened up on him from below. 2 companies of communists down there sighted on him with their small arms and machine guns. That was all he needed. Soon as he sighted their giveaway fire, he called in and directed airstrikes on those tree-covered positions. Next day, he sighted another enemy camp, and this time did the same work, drawing fire, then directing the retaliation by air and artillery. Scooting around up there, he was able to maul 2 enemy battalions. For this type of activity, that Army pilot was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross. He'd earned it. Here's Johnny Idley back to tell you about another hazardous occupation. It seems airmen aren't the only ones separated from the drama of life by a thin sheet of transparent material.
I go window cleaning to earn an honest bob. For a nosy parker, it's an interesting job. Now it's the job that just suits me. A window cleaner you would be if you could see what I can see. When I'm cleaning windows, the honeymooning couples too, you should see them bill and coo. You'd be surprised at what they do. When I'm cleaning windows, in my profession I work hard, but I'll never stop. I'll find this blinking ladder till I get right to the top. The blushing bride, she looks divine. The bridegroom, he is doing fine. I'd rather have his job than mine when I'm cleaning windows. The chambermaid, sweet names I call. It's a wonder I don't fall. My mind's not on my work at all. When I'm cleaning windows, I know a fella, such a swell, you know he has a thirst that I can tell. I've seen him drink his bath as well. When I'm cleaning windows, in my profession I work hard, but I'll never stop. I'll climb this blinking ladder till I get right to the top. Pajamas lying side by side, ladies' nighties I have spied. I've often seen what goes inside when I'm cleaning windows. There's a famous talky queen. She looks a flipper on the screen. She's more like 80 than 18. When I'm cleaning windows, she pulls her hair all down behind, then pulls down her, never mind, and afterwards pulls down the blind. When I'm cleaning windows, in my profession I work hard, but I'll never stop. I'm gonna climb this blinking ladder till I get right to the top. Well, now an old maid walks around the floor. She's so fed up, one day I'm sure she's gonna drag me in and lock the door. When I'm cleaning windows. When I'm cleaning, oh baby, when I'm cleaning. When I'm cleaning windows.
Johnny Idley has been making a specialty of those comedy songs of the late George Formby. I won't say any more about that. You'll be asking how old I am. I'd rather finish telling you about the Army Aviation Corps, which commenced in 1912. I didn't. Like Lieutenant Colin Scott, many other Army pilots have earned proud awards for gallantry in action. The variety of their tasks performed in the face of danger is almost endless. The Australian Army Aviation Corps is an infant corps among many others that can trace their traditions far back into the past. But this youngest corps has already made its mark. Made its mark so clearly that when our soldiers see the small machines scooting low across the sky, they nod to each other and smile. They've got good things going for them up there. Would you believe we've been saving our last number as a tribute to the future of the Army Aviation Corps? It's... Well, no, I won't labor the point. Play it, gang.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Let me know what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me play forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
A trip that man has already taken. And we took it again then with Michelle Kennedy, Mark Leon, and The Graduate. In Army Showtime, you also heard the voice of Johnny Idley with the BEA Studio Group, and our story was about the Australian Army Aviation Corps. This is Terry McDermott. I'll be back at the same time next week. Join me, eh?
That was Army Showtime, your action and entertainment half hour. Music arrangements and direction by Jeff Kitchen. Produced by Monty Maisels in the studios of Broadcast Exchange of Australia for the Directorate of Army Public Relations.